This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, an update on Russia's interference in the 2016 U.S. elections and Moscow's continued attacks on the U.S. democratic system as we approach the November 2018 midterm congressional elections. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Some analysts and policymakers have characterized Russian cyber attacks as tantamount to an act of war, no less serious than the September 11th, 2001 attacks on U.S. soil. The U.S. intelligence community has long ago concluded that Moscow interfered in the 2016 U.S. elections using cyber attacks and a wide-ranging disinformation campaign, especially via social media, all condoned and directed by the highest levels of the Kremlin. The U.S. intelligence community has ascertained that these attacks were launched to bolster Republican Donald Trump and to hurt Democrat Hillary Clinton. Even though U.S. President Donald Trump continues to characterize the investigation into Russia's interference in our democratic process as a so-called witch hunt and calls for it to end, concrete evidence reveals that U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has been conducting a thorough and impartial investigation. Approximately 26 Russians and four former advisors to President Trump have been indicted thus far. The investigation into Russian interference also includes examining whether Trump associates coordinated with Russia and whether Mr. Trump has obstructed the probe. This past week, Mr. Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, who has extensive ties to the Kremlin, went on trial for tax evasion and bank fraud. In another stunning development, in mid-July, the Justice Department announced indictments against 12 Russian nationals, accusing them of engaging in a sustained effort to hack Democrats' emails and computer networks. All 12 defendants are members of the GRU, a Russian Federation intelligence agency, an integral part of the Russian military, who were acting in their official capacities. The Justice Department says the hacking targeted Hillary Clinton's campaign, the Democratic National Committee, and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, with the intention to release and weaponize that information on the Internet under several names, such as DC Leaks and Guccifer 2.0. In recent days, Facebook shut down a sophisticated disinformation operation on its platform that engaged in divisive messaging ahead of the U.S. midterm elections. Facebook said the 32 false pages and profiles lured approximately 300,000 people with deceptive ads and bogus events designed to stir opposition to President Trump and anger his base. The company did not definitively link the campaign to Russia, but said the tools and techniques were reminiscent of those used by the Internet Research Agency, the Kremlin-linked group accused of interfering in the 2016 election. And there's more. On July 16, the U.S. government arrested a Russian national on charges of being an unregistered agent of the Russian government. Maria Butina, a gun rights advocate, is accused of secretly working to develop personal relationships with influential conservative Americans and infiltrate political organizations such as the National Rifle Association. In mid-July, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security said that Russian hackers had successfully penetrated the U.S. electric grid, another dramatic disclosure of the active threats posed by Moscow to the nation's critical power infrastructure. Well, with us to continue our discussion about the significance and implications of Russia's efforts to destabilize American democracy through clandestine and overt means are Mark Simakovsky. He's senior fellow at the Eurasia Center of the Atlantic Council, and that's a prominent think tank based here in Washington, and Brett Schaefer. He's social media analyst and communications officer at the Alliance for Securing Democracy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. And the Alliance for Securing Democracy is a bipartisan project that tracks ongoing efforts to subvert democracy in the United States and Europe. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program, Mark Simakovsky. That was a long introduction, but it was important to set things up. The last time we were here at these microphones with you, we were discussing Russia's interference in our democracy. This was back in March. The special counsel's office had indicted 13 Russian nationals and three Russian entities for conducting an illegal information warfare campaign. Now, how significant are these recent set of indictments from July naming members of the GRU, the Russian military intelligence arm?
These indictments are incredibly significant. They obviously showcase not only a continuation of Mueller's investigation, but an acceleration of that investigation, an acceleration particularly targeting Russian government activity and Russian government involvement in undermining the elections in 2016. The GRU is Russian military intelligence, charged often in recent years in more robust tasks of undermining the Kremlin's enemies abroad, not necessarily solely in classical military campaigns. So the fact that you had 12 Russians indicted who all come from Russian military intelligence backgrounds and, as you said, are active in the Russian military intelligence showcases that Mr. Mueller is targeting individuals that clearly had ties to the Kremlin and who had ties to the Kremlin and who are clearly doing the bidding of the Kremlin during those activities. So again, I think it showcases another layer of where this investigation is going. He has targeted not only individuals that were U.S. citizens that were involved in engaging potentially with Russians and favoring Donald Trump, but now he's also focused on Russian officers as well as Russian citizens like Ms. Butina, which again showcases that Mr. Mueller is very carefully going through a whole layer of involvement. And I assume we are going to see more. And again, the timing of some of those announcements were very interesting, particularly as they were timed ahead of President Trump's meeting with President Putin in Helsinki several weeks ago.
Turning to you, Brett Schaefer, for your take on the significance of these recent set of indictments as they add to our understanding of Russia's interference in our democracy.
As Mark mentioned, it gets us one step closer to the Kremlin. So before we were talking about the Internet Research Agency, which obviously has been set up in a way that there's sort of a distance between the IRA and the Kremlin, and that's on purpose. The Kremlin has often used that tactic of plausible deniability to say that we aren't actually doing what everyone knows that we are doing. But now, when we talk about the GRU, there's no question that Vladimir Putin is involved. And also, Special Counsel Mueller's indictment just had an incredible amount of detail about how the GRU worked and how hacking, the hacking of the Democratic Party, fits into the disinformation network. So you see how these hacked emails were leaked through fake online personas that the GRU was running. So there are a lot of puzzle pieces, and we're starting to put them together slowly.
Back to you, Mark Zimakovsky. Speaking of the disinformation campaign, this last week we have disclosures by Facebook. More manipulation is going on. So it continues to be an active problem for Facebook and its billions of users, even after the company has spent heavily to prevent it. What do you make of these recent revelations of trick pages to sow discord among the American populace?
You know, I think this is one of potentially the most important aspects of Mueller's investigation, is it's an investigation that showcases a past activity, but also it's an investigation that is highlighting to the public that things are going on that people don't necessarily appreciate. And the recent Facebook announcement, the announcement by the Department of Homeland Security about intrusion of our electrical grid, as well as other items that showcase that Russia still is maintaining a influence campaign to not only undermine the upcoming elections, but to sow discord in the United States and divisions between the American people, between people within the Trump administration, as well as between members of Congress. So I think in many ways these announcements are significant. Facebook clearly took a very significant step in making a decision to publicize this ahead of the elections. Some of the tactics were similar. Again, they didn't lay blame directly on Russia. But I think what you're going to be seeing in the coming weeks and months as we head to the elections, you're going to see more evidence come out that reinforces what our Director of National Intelligence, Mr. Coates, has publicly claimed is an ongoing campaign to undermine our democracy. And he's stated very publicly, again, President Trump's senior most intelligence official, that the lights are blinking red. And the lights are blinking red because Russia's campaign never stopped in 2016. And this is why it's so important to get to the bottom of the investigation, not only of what happened in 2016, but also to address what's still ongoing. And that's what also you're seeing with some of the sanctions calls, even today, from the Congress.
Turning to you, Brett Schaefer, this is an area of expertise for you, social media. What do you make of Facebook's recent revelations, and what do they say to you?
Well, I think there are two important takeaways from what Facebook released. The first, the fact that they were transparent in exposing these operations to the public is key, because if we're trying to educate, if we're talking about media literacy or digital literacy, the public needs to be aware of what these campaigns look like. So when they encounter them in the future, they're inoculated to some degree so that they have an awareness of what these things look like. And Facebook or Twitter, they're not just taking these pages down when they see them. They're actually educating the public by releasing them. The other thing that I think is very important about what Facebook did is they used the words coordinated inauthentic behavior. So what they attacked was not necessarily the content that they found online, so that we're not talking about right-leaning or left-leaning content. What we're talking about is the manipulation of the information space. So we see, for example, automated behavior online. So bots would be the common term of amplifying certain content and swarming material online. So we see these groups that are set up. They're not real users. They're not real individuals. So what Facebook was attacking is that kind of behavior. So they went after the vulnerabilities on their platform instead of attacking the content individually. And I think that's very important.
In addition to Russia's hidden hand with respect to these fake accounts, fake ads, bogus events on social media, did we learn anything about cooperation with local conspiracy cult groups who are echoing, for example, the kinds of messages that Russia wants to convey to sow discord, and even echoing President Trump's vilification of the free press and so forth?
Direct cooperation is tough to determine. I don't think we've reached that point yet. What we can say is there's often significant overlap in terms of what these Russian-linked accounts promote and what domestic actors are promoting as well. So it's sometimes very difficult to actually differentiate between the two, because these Russian actors often find legitimate, real American voices. Now, they're probably on the fringe, so we're talking things like InfoWars, so these conspiratorial sites. So they're actually taking some material that exists legitimately in the American information space, and they're promoting them and amplifying them. What they do is they find extreme voices, and they essentially turn up the volume on those extreme voices. So what that does is it drowns out legitimate conversations in the middle.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Mark Simakovsky, he's senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center, and Brett Schaefer, from whom you just heard. He's social media analyst and communications officer at the Alliance for Securing Democracy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. We're discussing the status of the ongoing U.S. investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 presidential election and what measures are being taken or not to safeguard the 2018 midterm congressional elections. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Now here's a shout out and a happy birthday to loyal listener from Benin City in Edo State, Nigeria, Jonathan Ugiagbe. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. So back to you, Mark Simakovsky. In addition to all of these subversive efforts, we are seeing attempts to hack into the computer networks of even members of Congress. So we saw in recent days attempts to hack the computer network of Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill. This was discovered in time. But again, what does this say about what Russia is doing and what perhaps the United States is not sufficiently doing to protect members of Congress and others?
I think the attacks, again, are an indication that Russia is likely continuing to undergo a coordinated, coherent, covert attempt to sow discord and confusion in the United States political system ahead of the midterm elections. That goal runs in parallel to President Putin's objectives to try to engage President Trump and improve U.S.-Russian relations to benefit Russian interests, which you saw was the driver between the two presidents after the NATO summit in Brussels. Again, I think that campaign, which is ongoing, reinforces that Russia, despite an interest in seeing an American president who wants to improve relations, believes that it's in its national interest to undermine our elections, and also does not believe that sufficient costs have been created for stopping that behavior. And so that gets to what hasn't been done. And I think what's important is the Trump administration at the senior most levels, particularly from the president, has not taken a leadership role in calling out these transgressions and not laid out for the American public clearly at the presidential level what's been done and what will be done to ensure that our 2018 elections are not interfered with and are secure. President Trump had not conducted a National Security Council meeting on this topic prior to the summit because of the political pressure that he faced on his poor performance in Helsinki. Ultimately, he did conduct an NSC meeting in the last 2 weeks, which was about 30 minutes. There was no statement afterwards about what the U.S. government had decided collectively to do. My indications from many people in the U.S. government is there's many things that we could be doing, some of which we are doing, but need more presidential leadership. So I think one of the things that we should be doing clearly is laying out publicly what costs would be associated if the elections are interfered with. And again, this is why you're seeing Congress take more of a role. There was new sanctions legislation introduced by Senators Graham and Menendez that lay out a whole range of measures of additional sanctions that could be incurred against Russia if the Director of National Intelligence does find that the elections in 2018 were hacked by Russia or any foreign power.
Notwithstanding congressional efforts, Brett Schaefer, still, doesn't it create a problem when at the highest levels of the government in the White House, there are conflicting voices at best and statements by the president that somehow the Russia probe is a so-called witch hunt and there is no longer a cybersecurity expert at the White House? How can we have a coherent and effective effort to combat Russian subversion and perhaps other accomplices in the United States without a unified and strong voice?
It's enormously problematic. If you're talking about deterrence, you need to be consistent and you need to be credible. If on one day the Senate comes out and says, as they did actually during a hearing, and said it's no longer a question of if Russia interfered in our election and continues to interfere in our democratic society, it's a question of what we should do about it. That same day, as you mentioned, the president came out with a tweet saying the whole Russia probe is a witch hunt, it's a hoax. So that's a huge problem if you're not getting a consistent message delivered from the U.S. government. President's own administration, Dan Coats, for example, has been pretty consistent about this. Secretary Pompeo, they've been consistent. Where we've seen inconsistency is from the president himself. And that's obviously a huge problem because if you're trying to communicate to the Russians and to other foreign powers who may want to copy Russia's playbook, you need to have this consistent message and a credible threat that there will be action taken if this continues in the case of Russia or if another foreign power starts adopting what Russia has done and tries to interfere in our democracy.
Mark Simakovsky, some policymakers and analysts have said if Mr. Trump continues to deny that he has no ties to Russia and that there's no reason to believe that there's any so-called collusion, then why wouldn't he just want this investigation to go forward?
I think the problem is he still believes that the primary focus of this investigation is to undermine his presidency and undermine the legitimacy of his election victory. And so as a result, the entire investigation is poisoned because of that target. And that's, again, unfortunate, but also I think is a reason why the Mueller investigation needs to be insulated, because it is so much more important to get to the bottom of what the Russians were doing so we can educate ourselves, educate our government, and educate the population about the vulnerabilities that continue to exist, which are exposed daily as we see our electrical grids, our senators and congressmen, and potentially our voting booths undermined, as well as the media that we listen to and the things that we've taken for granted on social media that actually are being manipulated potentially by a foreign entity or foreign power. You know, all those things I don't believe would be as exposed unless there was a Mueller investigation.
So turning back to you, Brett Schaefer, the investigation goes on. This past week, we had the first trial within the context of the investigation of Paul Manafort, Mr. Trump's former campaign manager, albeit on charges unrelated to Russia specifically. They were related to his alleged bank fraud and tax evasion. Nonetheless, he's very close to the Kremlin, so other things may come out.
And I think that's clearly a concern of this White House, and we've seen different messages again coming from the White House about Paul Manafort. At times, the president has defended him. His recent tweets have said the Manafort indictment is also a witch hunt. At times, he's tried to distance himself from Paul Manafort, saying he was only on the campaign for a few months, didn't play a critical role. That guy really wasn't that involved. So whatever comes out, it doesn't have any kind of implications in terms of the presidency, the election, etc. So I think there's definitely some concern from this administration about what will come out during the course of this trial.
And of course, then there are so many other angles, that of his former lawyer, so-called fixer, Michael Cohen, and a number of revelations that may hurt Mr. Trump or not in the coming weeks, depending on how that particular aspect plays out. But back to you, Mark Zimakovsky, just to remind us, you know, what the goal of Russia is in all of this, and to understand that Russia is a bad actor, you know, trying to create chaos, undermine democracy around the world, not just here in the United States, but in Europe. And why, you know, notwithstanding good faith efforts to want to get along with our adversaries, Vladimir Putin's Russia, why that is very problematic, given their behavior, whether vis-a-vis our democracy, interfering in eastern Ukraine, having annexed Crimea unlawfully, and so many other bad acts that Vladimir Putin is engaged in, including poisoning former counterintelligence agents on British soil, etc.
You know, I think it's important to look at that international context of Russia's actions. Again, from Russia's standpoint, its actions aren't bad. Its actions are defending Russian national interests. The key point is that Russian national interests oftentimes contradict American national interests. And what you're seeing play out in the world stage in Syria, in the UK with attacks, in Ukraine with the continued occupation of eastern Ukraine, as well as Russian activity potentially to serve as a spoiler in North Korea, are continued Russian activities that fundamentally undermine and contradict American interests. And so the objective of having a normal, good relationship with Putin is not an American objective. You have to showcase how that will serve American interests. And when Russia continues to take destabilizing actions around the world that undermine our interests, you have to understand, is it possible to have a positive, normalized relationship with Russia that President Trump has sought to achieve? Again, he should have the ability and the right to engage with the Russian president, but that has to be done in a way that defends American interests. And I think President Putin has been very smart in his engagement with President Trump. He doesn't necessarily want a normalized relationship with the U.S. I think he actually understands very clearly that President Trump is damaged in his ability to coherently define a policy toward Russia because of all the congressional and domestic political pressure that the president faces. What President Putin wants to do is undermine American democracy, divide Americans, and even divide the administration. And because of the president's very strange approach to Russia, you're seeing all that. And the hangover of Helsinki is the president came back amidst an uproar of his performance, which further damaged U.S. credibility because there's such clear conflicts within the administration on how to approach Russia. So in many ways, Helsinki was a victory for Putin, not in that it improved U.S.-Russia ties, but it further undermined the president's ability to conduct real unity on U.S. foreign policy.
And it, of course, it strengthened his hand, that is Vladimir Putin, Brett Schaefer. This is a dictator, an autocrat, who does not preside over a democratic system. They have elections. These elections are rigged. There is no free press. There is persecution of journalists and civil society groups. These are not the norms that the United States shares. Russia is no friend of the United States or any democracy based on its behavior.
Absolutely. And I think what Vladimir Putin also wants to do is undermine the idea of objective truth. We've seen that clearly with how the Kremlin media operates. So when Donald Trump goes out and says something like the American press are the enemy of the people, that's a line that's right out of Putin's playbook. So this sort of conspiratorial world that has been created by the Kremlin and by Kremlin media is something that we've seen somewhat adopted concerningly in the U.S. as well. So I think when you look at the marrying of the two ideas, the most concerning thing is the attack on press and the attack on the idea of truth. Because, of course, when you see things like MH17, the airliner that was downed over Ukraine, the Kremlin didn't come out with one narrative of what happened. They came out with about 30. The same thing with the Skripal poisoning in the UK. So when you have an American administration that consistently attacks the press and says not to believe the press, that is playing right into their hands. Because if we no longer can say what is true and what is not true, I think people in the middle just disengage from the political and social process. And that's enormously dangerous for democracies.
That is all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Mark Simakovsky, he's senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center, and Brett Schaefer, social media analyst at the Alliance for Securing Democracy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights and analysis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.